Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the weekly worldview. And we are back from an extended time away from the studio, and we want to welcome you back to the show where we don't take ourselves too seriously, we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought, and it's so good to have you back, and it's so good to be back here at a mile high looking down. A little greeting there. A little greeting there for my extremely attractive audio engineer. Looking particularly more attractive today than she did yesterday or the day before. Injecting yourself into the program a little early this week, I see. But we are back here at a mile high looking down on all of you. Oh, but it is good to be back. All right, put those guitars away, boys. We've got to get on with the show. We've got way more stuff than we can ever do. When we left Denver, Colorado, Tim Tebow was the starting quarterback. In fact, John Elway had told him that he would be the starting quarterback going into camp. But as we were on the road, the entire world lost their minds, including certain members of the Denver Broncos football club. And we will address that. As the show progresses, we have some things to say about that. But there's other news, certainly more important news, I think, that it's more important. Maybe not to my personal psyche and that of my extremely attractive audio engineer. Don't care anymore? Just don't care anymore. Well, that makes it easier, right? If you just stop caring, then it's a lot easier to deal with. But hey, our troubles are few. Listen to this. From Grand Junction, Colorado, Daryl Rockwell, 49-year-old gentleman, told police that he grabbed his .22 caliber rifle and set out from his home back on October 5th to shoot at a bird after spotting it at the top of the hill about 90 feet away. He says his intent was to spook the bird away by shooting at it with his rifle. But after shooting at the bird, the man said he noticed it didn't fly away, and he reported hearing a woman moaning in pain. Rockwell soon discovered that he had shot a 23-year-old woman in the head, mistaking her red mohawk for the menacing bird. Yeah. Now, the district attorney has told the judge that the woman may have passed out from alcohol before being shot. Police officers also found a bag of suspected methamphetamine near where the woman was shot. Now, the woman did survive the shooting. We can all be thankful there. The question is, how much longer will she survive her lifestyle of a red mohawk and passing out amidst empty alcohol bottles and half-filled bags of methamphetamine? How much longer will she survive? You know, sometimes people need a wake-up call, and this could very well be it for this mohawked young woman. Perhaps there will be a silver lining around the cloud of having been shot in the head, which I'm sure was quite uncomfortable at the very least. We wish the woman all the best, and for Daryl Rockwell, the 49-year-old who shot the mohawked woman, well, you really need to confirm your target before you start putting rounds downrange, and he'll probably remember that for the rest of his life. All right. So see, in light of that story, my dear, our problems are few. We've neither shot anyone, nor have we recently passed out amidst empty bottles of vodka and methamphetamine. Anyway, what else do we have? We've got the final four. Are you familiar with March Madness, my dear? Not in any way. Yeah. Well, it's going on. It's a college basketball tournament. Yeah, and apparently there is a team in Kentucky. Apparently there is a college in Kentucky with a basketball team Let's see here now. The University of Kentucky team defeated the Louisville team in a Final Four matchup. And, of course, fans swarmed into the streets near the university campus. They've been overturning cars and lighting couches on fire. And this isn't even the final. This is just the semifinal. We can imagine the violence that can be anticipated after the final. I can't comprehend it myself, but as I said, after we hit the road, it seems like the world lost their mind. Everyone's gone insane. Here's another example from CNN. In the 6 months since the repeal of the U.S. military's don't ask, don't tell, don't seek, don't smell, don't smile policy on homosexuals in the military, many of the most prestigious military institutions in the country are adding a student group to their club rosters that they had never seen before. You guessed it, gay pride groups are now infiltrating America's top military academies. In December, a group of students at the U.S. Coast Guard Academy in Connecticut formed a group called the Spectrum Diversity Council to serve as a gay-straight alliance on campus. That is, a gay-straight alliance, by the way, is a mechanism or a device to facilitate cruising amongst the homosexual class within the heterosexual class. It's disgusting. Let's see. The night before Don't Ask, Don't Tell ended, cadets at Norwich University, the nation's oldest private military academy, held the first meeting of the school's lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, questioning, and allies club. Now questioning is a group? People who just aren't sure? What is that? Lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, questioning. Those are people who've not yet been seduced by a queer professor, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, and their allies club. Yeah. If you have like more than 7 words in the name of your club, you need a new marketing team. This is the Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, Questioning, and Allies Club. Welcome. There's coffee in the back. These clubs are school-sanctioned, and according to this CNN report, their numbers are growing. Even at the United States Military Academy at West Point, cadets are forming their own Spectrum student group to promote homosexual behavior at West Point. Surely all is lost. Surely all is lost. Meanwhile, China continues to build a blue water navy and a stealth bomber. I wonder if the Chinese military is being overrun by homosexuals. Very well may be, as a matter of fact. The mean kind, them butch kind, the same kind that basically organized the Nazi Party and instigated World War II. And we all know how that went, right? Anyway, pretty disturbing. Yeah, like the Spartans and all that. Yeah, I'm sure with the Chinese, with their, you know, killing 20% of their female population over the last 30 years, got a lot of extra men who can't find women, and so they join the army and they want to break things and blow things up. Meanwhile, our boys are being taught how to fall in love with other boys. There at West Point. It's just disgusting. All right. I've got a story out of Detroit. It's kind of funny because I had covered this when the news first broke about the Hootery militia. You remember the Hootery? Those are a bunch of bearded and bespeckled crotchety old men up in Michigan. Well, U.S. District Judge, let's see, where's this from now? This is from the Washington Post. U.S. District Judge Victoria Roberts has declared that militia members in the Hootery militia expressed hatred of law enforcement, but they did not. Their expressed hatred did not amount to a conspiracy to rebel against the government. The FBI had secretly planted an informant and an FBI agent inside the Hootery militia back in 08 to collect hours of anti-government audio and video that became the cornerstone of a much publicized case against the Hootery militia, but it turns out that they're just a bunch of crotchety, bitter old men, which I'm on my way to becoming a crotchety, bitter old man. I am. I'm on my way to... I haven't joined the Hootery, and I don't think I will, but I am becoming a crotchety, bitter, mean-spirited old man. And And I'm looking forward to it, frankly. Yeah, FBI can come and knock at my door, bug my house. Actually, they could just download the podcast if they want to indict me. Let's move on to more serious news. Sheriff Joe Arpaio is on the hunt. Yes, that's right. This is from WorldNet Daily. The Selective Service System has declined Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio's request to see the original copy of Barack Hussein Obama's Selective Service Registration Form. Yet we all know that Joe Arpaio formed a posse to investigate the possibility that Mr. Obama is a fraudulent person, misrepresenting himself as an American who loves America. As even American, for crying out loud. Arpaio announced back on March 1st that he believes there's probable cause that the Selective Service registration card is fraudulent. Now, typically when a sheriff indicates that there may be fraudulent documentation, other members of law enforcement take that seriously. But that's not the case with Mr. Arpaio. Selective Service Director Lawrence G. Romo has dismissed Arpaio's request. He says this agency has no evidence that President Obama's 1980 registration is not authentic, and that's pretty much all he had to say. Well, no, he did say, however, Mr. Arpaio, if you have any credible evidence to the contrary and believe that a federal crime has been committed, we suggest that it be turned over immediately to the FBI in order to pursue an investigation. In response, Arpaio sent a second letter to Mr. Romo over at the Selective Service, and Mr. Arpaio said, quote, if your office has the original, authentic Selective Service registration form for Barack Hussein Obama from July 29, 1980, please indicate whether or not you are in possession of this document. If the document is in your possession, please make it available for inspection by my sheriff's office investigators. We will travel to your facility to analyze said document. Sincerely yours, Joe. Anyway, Arpaio gave gave Mr. Romo 10 days to respond. And this is the last week in March. Well, we're coming right up on that. And we'll see how much longer the resistance can stand with Mr. Arpaio as at the head against the forces of darkness that have installed Barry Ho in the White House. It's just sad. All right, now let's quickly divert, because we love the birth certificate story. I wasn't even aware of the Selective Service card story. I have heard of the Social Security number story. Barry's got a weird Social Security number out of Connecticut. He never lived there, but at least that's been alleged. And we wish Mr. Arpaio the best, because I have a lot more respect for Sheriff Joe Arpaio than anyone in the Barry Ho administration. And I would take the word of Mr. Arpaio over any of the Herodians serving in Washington, D.C. And it's also very fun to watch and comment on Mr. Arpaio. We sure do appreciate it. All right. Now, from the Washington Post, Tim Tebow Jets merchandise has hit New York stores. At press time, a sports memorabilia chain called Modell's, the largest sports memorabilia chain, retail chain on the East Coast, had no adult jerseys left, just T-shirts and children's jerseys. They have children's jerseys. We could deck the kids out. New York stores in the chain sold 1,000 units the first hour they were open on March 23rd.
I knew it.
Number 15 in the green. All right, so that brings us to our ode to vanity, because I had thought that Pat Robertson had maybe pronounced a curse on the Denver Broncos, but he didn't. Televangelist Pat Robertson, according to the Huffington Post, said Peyton Manning was a tremendous MVP quarterback, but he's been injured. If that injury comes back, Denver will find itself without a quarterback, and in my opinion, it would serve them right, said Pat Robertson. Well, I rarely agree with Pat Robertson, and I frankly disagree that the issue with Mr. Manning is his injury. I have a feeling the doctors did a pretty good job, and that Peyton is probably as good as he was 2 years ago when he was defeated in the playoffs, and even 3 years ago when he was defeated in the playoffs, and like that. I'm not so up on my football, should God curse the Denver Broncos was a question I asked on Denver radio this week, and nobody seemed to care, but I care. And I've written my ode to vanity. Oh, Broncos owner, Pat Bowlen. Broncos owner, Pat Bowlen, may your fortune be squandered in vain pursuit of temporal glory. May your team be taken from you and given to one more worthy. May your reputation, Mr. Bowlen, forever embody the lowest traits of vanity and smallness of mind. And may your trophy case be barren unto the third and fourth generation. And to you, John Fox, head coach, may your days as head coach be brief and your career end in ignominy. And may you be banned from entering Canton, Ohio, even as a tourist, unto the third and fourth generation. And to you, John Elway, may your legacy be forever tarnished. May you toil but never finish. May your playoff schedule be barren unto the third and fourth generation. And may your past glory be referenced only in light of the eternal asterisk marking you as the man who lost Tebow. To Peyton Manning, we will take Tim Tebow's lead and wish you all the best. And to Tim Tebow, we will, for now, just say, go Jets! Not sure I could go on after that. I'm not sure I can even do more of a show. Is there anything left to be said, ladies and gentlemen? Okay, but we must proceed with other news, despite our brokenness of heart, that there is no Tebow news in Denver this week, nor shall there be until they play the Jets. At which game my children will be decked out in their Jets jerseys. And if we can get them, we'll get some adult jerseys as well, but they're probably going to be hard to find. All right. Now, on to serious news, if you can call it that. This is from the Daily Caller, moving away from sports. A nightclub in Montgomery, Alabama, is hosting a food stamp Friday party on April 6th. That seems to glamorize life on the federal government's food assistance program. The Daily Caller reports that an invitation for the Food Stamp Friday party tells patrons of the Rose Supper Club in North Montgomery, Alabama, that the Friday night cover charge will be just $5 if a food stamp card is shown upon arrival. The Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which is called SNAP, was designed for Americans living at near poverty levels, according to the Daily Caller. I personally disagree. I think it was designed to build a voter base for the progressive ruling class, and I think they're at like 13 million people now. It's quite the voter base they've built on the SNAP program. It was also a program designed to keep Americans at near poverty levels. But anyway, back to Montgomery, Alabama. According to the postcard-sized flyer advertising the food stamp Friday party, there will be free shots at the door for people with their EBT card. Yeah, the announcement's artwork mimics an electronics benefits transfer card, which is the debit card that is used by Americans to redeem their SNAP benefits. You know, in the old days, you had to turn in the green and purple and orange food stamps in front of everybody in line at the store. Well, that may have harmed people's self-esteem, so the government gives you now, apparently, an electronics benefits transfer card that looks just like anybody else's debit card, so you don't have to feel like a loser when you're, basically stealing the money of your neighbor's grandchildren in order to buy popcorn, Doritos, and beer. I said beer, and I know. I was driving up Highway 101 in Oceanside, which is a really killer drive. I recommend it. They got the tall, skinny palm trees lining for I don't know, a couple, 3 miles. It's really a cool drive. Really feels, gives you that California feel. But they have on Highway 101 there in Oceanside, just this side of the trailer park, they have liquor stores that are disguised as grocery stores. Basically, you have a 3,000-square-foot liquor store that has some peanuts and some bubble gum by the checkout counter, and so they somehow qualify as a grocery store. And they have a huge lighted sign that says, EBT, now accepted, at Murphy's Liquor Store, Oceanside, California. Anyway, pretty embarrassing. And I know the general conservative take on this is that welfare recipients should not be allowed to use their benefits to purchase liquor and other non-essential food items. But I disagree with that. I disagree completely. Yes. I think there should be no welfare recipients in America. Get rid of welfare. Stop giving my grandchildren's money away to people stumbling around in a backwards baseball cap up Highway 101 in Oceanside as they stumble into Murphy's Liquor and Grocery and whip out their EBT card. So, anyway, I appreciate the nightclub, the Rose Supper Club, for calling attention to the ridiculous nature of welfare in America today, and hopefully this will at least facilitate a conversation about the fact that your government and mine is effectively destroying the lives and the entrepreneurial spirit of millions of Americans every day by stealing money from your grandchildren and mine and giving it to them for nothing, asking nothing in return. All right. Now let's move on. This is serious news. This is from the Personhood File. I'm gearing up to get back into signature gathering mode. I'm going to hit some passion plays this week with my personhood petition here in Colorado. Should be good. Should be fun. But let's go to the Personhood File from lifenews.com. Scott Fishbach, the director of Minnesota Citizens Concern for Life, has uncovered information showing a clinical trial approved by the Food and Drug Administration. That's Barry Ho's Food and Drug Administration. This clinical trial uses brain tissue from aborted babies to treat macular degeneration. Stem Cells, Inc., the company Stem Cells, Inc., will inject fetal brain stem cells into the eyes of up to 16 patients to study the cells' effect on vision. According to Minnesota Citizens Concern for Life, Stem Cells, Inc. is not just using embryonic stem cells, because a five-day-old human being at the embryonic stage does not have a brain. But a fetus at 10 or 20 weeks of development with visible fingers, toes, and ears has a functioning brain. Developing human beings in the womb are treated simply as raw material for laboratory experiments by Stem Cells, Inc. and other companies seeking to monetize the bodies of aborted, murdered, unborn children. And you and I, ladies and gentlemen, vicariously have given our approval because we paid for the approval process. We paid the functionaries at the FDA to approve this clinical trial. You and I did. So we have now vicariously participated in not only the murder of the children, but now the harvesting of their body parts and the monetization of it. And I declare to you that only personhood, only the restoration of the legal personhood of every human being from the beginning of their biological development to natural death, only personhood can have a prayer to stop this insidious act of the government in forcing you and I to participate as we do every day in the murder, the legalized murder of children. Only personhood, ladies and gentlemen. And now we've got a story from Canada from the personhood file. Next month, a motion will be put before the Canadian House of Commons to amend Canada's a section of Canada's criminal code that defines personhood from the moment of birth. That's what the Canadian criminal code says now, is that legal personhood is established from the moment of birth. But this motion has several questions that will put before that will be put before the House of Commons, discussing, asking questions. For example, what medical evidence exists to demonstrate that a child is or is not a human being before the moment of complete birth? Is the preponderance of medical evidence consistent with the declaration that a child is only a human being at the moment of complete birth? So Canadian governing officials who have spent a lifetime avoiding the issue of legalized baby killing are going to be forced to consider these questions. And I think the first question is devastating to the pro-abortion position. What medical evidence exists to demonstrate that a child is or is not human before the moment of complete birth? And, well, prep school biology, ladies and gentlemen, tell us that at one point, each and every one of us were a single cell containing all the information necessary to build a complete human being. The evidence of that is, well, all the complete human beings around you and how they started. So a pretty devastating question to put before these bureaucratic functionaries in the Canadian House of Commons. The motion, formulated by a group of conservative MPs, aims to call into question the reasons for defining a person with legal rights as being from the moment of birth and not before. If successful, this motion will be put forward as a bill amending the criminal code to extend human rights to an unborn fetus. Now, the writer of this article, I picked this up off feministing.com is the website. And the woman who wrote this article is absolutely hysterical about this. She's freaking out. So I'm going to leave her comments. Well, I'll include a few of her comments because this author is very pro-abortion, quite hysterical. And she closes the article by saying, she says, "I beseech Canadian women who want to continue to have the right to make their own decisions about butchering their children. Make their own decisions about their bodies, to make this motion public news. Tweet it, Facebook it, tell your friends. We need our government to continue to act as a model to the rest of the world for their respect for a woman's right to chop their unborn baby into pieces and throw it in a garbage can or sell it to Stem Cells, Inc." Now, I made that last part up. I apologize. I don't want to misquote this hysterical woman. She says we need the government of Canada continue to act as a model to the rest of the world for their respect of a woman's right to make choices about her own body. But for perhaps the first time in many of their careers, members of the Canadian House of Commons are going to be forced to contemplate the fact that the unborn child is not the woman's own body. It's actually someone else's body. And why is it that despite all the scientific evidence to the contrary, we've declared that it's not a person until birth? And maybe a few initially, will come to the conclusion that a person is a person no matter how small. And someday down the road, perhaps before I die, but not likely, maybe before you die, if you're one of the younger people listening to this show, and if you'll get on your horse and start doing something about this, I tell you, you should take this woman's advice and tweet it, Facebook it, and tell your friends that the Canadian House of Commons is about to be confronted with the idea of personhood And if we'll all tweet it, Facebook it, tell your friends, and get out there and do something about it, someday we will return not only the Canadian House of Commons to some semblance of sanity, but perhaps we'll find sanity again right here in America. We don't have a lot of time for guitar solos, especially this guitar solo. It's one of the worst guitar solos in the history of solos. But go ahead. Okay. Do you agree? The 90s was a real low spot for guitar solos. I mean, it was pretty bad. But anyway, I'm glad to be here, right now, taking it to the adversary, standing up and declaring the truth that we simply cannot continue down this road of allowing the legalized killing of innocent people. And I look forward to the day when, just like we look at slavery right now, if you ask a 15-year-old kid about slavery and should we reinstate slavery, should there ever be slavery, how do you feel about the fact that there was slavery? Even a 15-year-old publicly educated heathen knows that slavery was a blight on America and a crime. And it should never be considered, and it should be looked back upon with shame. And I look forward to the day when someday the average 15-year-old kid in the street feels the same way about the legalized killing of innocent children. All right. Now, but it's up to us right here, right now, to do something about it. Now, let's move on to some international news from the war files from Tokyo. North Korea has announced that it will launch a rocket carrying a satellite between April 12th and 16th to mark the 100th anniversary of the birth of Kim Il-sung, the founder of the communist state of North Korea. Pyongyang says the operation is for peaceful purposes, but Japan, the United States, and South Korea see the launch as a cover for a long-range ballistic missile test. Duh, do you think? Maybe? This is from CNN. The fact that they actually print the statement, Pyongyang says the operation is for peaceful purposes. What are you thinking about over CNN? The government in Pyongyang has starved, murdered, imprisoned, beaten, raped, burned, and butchered millions of people. Yet CNN, I guess in an effort to be fair and balanced, puts their side of the story first. Pyongyang says the operation is for peaceful purposes, like all of its other operations. You know, the ones that starve, murder, rape, and brutalize millions of people within their borders every year. All those other peaceful things they're doing. If CNN could name one peaceful thing North Korea is doing, I might could give them some credibility. All right, I'm not going to rant against CNN anymore. I mean, it's pointless, right? Anyway, Japan says that its military has begun preparations to deploy ground-based Patriot missiles in Tokyo, as well as on Okinawa, Ishigaki, and Miyako. Yeah, Patriot missiles on Miyako. Hey, I've been to Miyako. It's like an island paradise. And if there's any place where there should be Patriot missiles, it's Miyako. They could just use the financial stimulation of having some missile batteries out there. I think there's one stoplight in Miyako, right?
No,
is there?
That's
Iijima. Okay. Anyway. They're also going to deploy Aegis destroyers capable of shooting down missiles in the East China Sea and in the Sea of Japan. So, well, good for them. And shame on CNN for lending any credibility to the likes of, who's the kid in charge now? That fat little Kim Dong-jun or something? Kim Jun-dong? I forget. Whatever. All right. Now, the big story that was covered up while I was on the road and was eclipsed by the Trayvon Martin controversy, was this story about about a radical Muslim jihadist who went on a killing rampage in France. Does anyone even remember the story? I saw it briefly. It was shocking. It was terrifying. I remember there was live coverage at one point of a standoff at this jihadi's apartment complex. But when I turned on the TV the next morning, it was wall to wall. We want justice for Trayvon. It was Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson and the rest of the regular cast of race-baiting characters. And they have dominated the news ever since. And this story's been virtually forgotten. But Al Jazeera told the Associated Press in Paris last week that they will not air a video that appears to show the actual attacks of the jihadi on French soldiers and the actual attack on a Jewish school in southwestern France. They say it looks like he hung a camera around his neck while he carried out these heinous, brutal terrorist attacks. The footage was contained on a USB key sent with a letter to the Paris office of Al Jazeera. Police traced the attacks to Mohamed Mera, a 23-year-old Frenchman, who was killed last week after the 30-hour standoff with police at his apartment building. Mera filmed all of his attacks, which began on March 11th with the murder of a French soldier. Before the spree ended, two more soldiers, three Jewish children, and a rabbi were killed. Now, that's an unusual thing for a jihadi to go on a killing rampage in France. And meanwhile, 10 or 20 young black men are killed every day in America, typically by criminals. But for whatever reason, this story has been chosen by Soros and Media Matters, and it's been anointed by the mainstream media in order to whip America into a racial frenzy. And can you believe that most of the moronic American people out there are stupid enough to buy into it? I mean, I'm just not sure. I hope it's not the case, but I can't help but think that all these media outlets wouldn't continue beating the Trayvon drum unless the ratings were good. But I hope we're not stupid enough to fall into this trick. But maybe we are. Because there's a lot of bigger things going on, ladies and gentlemen. A lot of bigger things. For example, from Fox News, former U.S. diplomat John Bolton has alleged that the Obama administration leaked a story about covert Israeli activity in order to foil potential plans by the country to attack Iran's nuclear program. Bolton, who served as U.N. ambassador under George W. Bush, was responding to an article in Foreign Policy magazine that quoted United States government sources claiming Israel had been granted access to airfields in Azerbaijan along Iran's northern border. I read the story, folks. Shocking. Shocking that this story would even come out. And all I could think of was, I hope this is disinformation on behalf of the Mossad and the Israeli military. Because the revelation that Azerbaijan is willing to allow Israeli aircraft to refuel is perhaps, if it's true, it's the greatest act taken against Israel, probably since the 1973 war. It's a naked attempt to prevent Israel from defending herself, perhaps from the bowels of the Barry Ho administration. Is that too hard to believe that they would do that? Well, John Bolton doesn't think so. He says, I think this leak is part of the administration's campaign against an Israeli attack. Now, the White House has not responded to Bolton's claims. They practiced the Soviet tactic of ignoring, minimizing, and dismissing their credible adversaries. And it's quite effective. It's quite an effective tactic when you have a pliable media who's on your side, like Barry Ho's got, and like John Bolton does not have at all. The article in Foreign Policy magazine quoted what were identified as high-level sources inside the U.S. government. It specifically mentioned four senior diplomats and military intelligence officers. These are people appointed by Barry Ho, who perhaps have leaked an extremely damaging story that could derail Israel's ability to attack The foreign policy article, according to Fox News, did not specify whether any of the information came from the White House, and there's no direct evidence that this was a coordinated leak. And believe me, folks, Barry Ho's good at not leaving a lot of evidence. He's from Chicago, for crying out loud. Bolton told Fox News, clearly this is an administration-orchestrated leak. This is not a rogue CIA guy saying, I think I'll leak this out. Bolton says it's simply unprecedented to reveal this kind of information about one of your own allies. But Barry and his apparatchiks have done just that, unless they're being tricked by the Jews, which that's what we got to hope for. That the Jews got like a double, triple, tactical strategy to outsmart these people. But in reading the article on face value, you can find it at Foreign Policy Magazine, foreignpolicy.com, I think. I don't see it here. Anyway, it's not that hard to find, folks. Read the story for yourself. It's chilling. All right. Now, Barry Ho's just yucking it up about all this from the politics file in Seoul, South Korea. A defense of President Obama said last week he wasn't guilty of hiding the ball when an open microphone caught him pleading with the president of Russia to delay missile shield talks until after the election. No. You'll recall that Mr. Obama was caught on tape telling Russian President Dmitry Medvedev that he needed space this year to put his reelection campaign behind him before taking up missile defense negotiations with the Russians. He said, quote, after my election, I'll have more flexibility. Allegedly, he was unaware that the conversation was being recorded by a journalist. Let's see. The Washington Times goes on to tell us that Republicans in Washington reacted angrily, fearing that Barry might be willing to give the Russians access to sensitive security information after the elections. Well, where would they ever get the idea that Barry Ho or anyone associated with his administration would ever leak any kind of information that could be harmful to national defense? There's this Foreign Policy Magazine article about Azerbaijan. And now there's the open mic. When a reporter asked Barry to clarify his comments that were caught on the alleged open mic, Barry began by asking reporters, he went like, are these mics on? It's all fun and games to Barry, you see. It's all fun and games. Even uglier, to give you an idea of where Barry and his minions' hearts are, this story from the Washington Free Beacon, which is at freebeacon.com, new website I haven't seen before. It's got a lot of good information. The State Department has altered an official communication to erase the fact that it had referred to Israel and Jerusalem as separate entities. That's right. Yeah. The Obama administration faced criticism on the issue last year when it was revealed that the White House had scrubbed all references to Jerusalem being a part of the Jewish state from a collection of photos on its website. Yes. Well, the release now states, there was a press release saying that Undersecretary Kathleen Stevens was traveling to Jerusalem and Israel. Well, now the release says that Ms. Stevens will be traveling to Algiers, Doha, Amman, Jerusalem, and Tel Aviv. Yeah. But in that previous iteration, the release of the State Department separated Jerusalem from Israel, which, of course, is what they really want to do, is separate Jerusalem from Israel. The White House has not responded to requests for comment on the story, and why should they? No one in the mainstream media is holding them responsible. I'm looking in your eyes, Barry. I see a demon right out of the pit of hell. Yeah. Creepy. Scary. Yeah, that's what it's all about. And this cult, ladies and gentlemen, has taken over the reins of power. They've taken the country over, for crying out loud. This is from Riyadh in Saudi Arabia, from the Associated Press. U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton. That's painful to even say that, isn't it? Imagine that Hillary Clinton is the Secretary of State. I mean, you would have never thought this 30 years ago. You would have never thought it was even possible that Hillary Clinton could be the Secretary of State. Anyways, she says Iran and six world powers have agreed to meet in Istanbul on Friday the 13th for the latest round of talks about Iran's nuclear program. So that's what Hill's doing. She's organizing talks on Friday the 13th so we can talk about Iran's nuclear program while Iran aims their missiles at Tel Aviv and gets ready to put nuclear weapons on the tips of said missiles and launch them the very second they're able. Anyway, so Friday the 13th, Hill's going to sit down with Iran and six other world powers, the United States, Britain, France, Germany, Russia, and China. Well, they all met 14 months ago, we remember, and they talked quite a bit back then. But the talks ended after 2 days with the sides unable to agree on what to talk about. Yes. So they got together a meeting to talk about Iran's nuclear program, but when they got together and all sat around the table, they just didn't find it all that interesting. Couldn't figure out what to talk about. Well, that's the cover story, folks. Actually, the talks were derailed when Obama administration officials insisted on discussing birth control and racism in America. That's what they wanted to get to the bottom of. That's right. Well, meanwhile, you know, Iranian officials, they wanted to discuss alternative means of wiping Israel off the map. And so Hillary and the other nations told Iran to just go back to Tehran and talk about wiping Israel off the map amongst themselves. We're here to attack the problems of birth control and racism in America. Yeah. Uh-huh. All right, now I said that no one could have imagined Hillary being the Secretary of State 30 years ago. Maybe I have to take that back because we have to remember that Jimmy Carter was the president of the United States. And so I imagine a number of prescient individuals in the mid to late 1970s saw all this coming. Anyway, from the Bad Religion file, President Jimmy Carter, who according to TheBlaze.com is purported to have, quote, distinguished himself with his outspoken Christianity. I mean, I know The Blaze is a relatively new news organization, but to report something that is so fatuous to imply that Jimmy Carter has distinguished himself with his outspoken Christianity is simply naive. So you folks over at The Blaze, you need to check yourselves. Anyway, they report that Carter has a new book called HIV, Lessons from Life's Bible. Oh, I'm sorry, NIV. Lessons from Life Bible, Personal Reflections with Jimmy Carter. That's his new book. I know, I'm sorry, I always get NIV confused with HIV. Because HIV is a disease that invades the host and silently destroys things in there until it manifests itself in the death throes of the victim. And the NIV Bible has just always struck me as very similar. Anyway. Let's not get off on a discussion of Bible translations. Let's just leave it at the fact that NIV is just to the left of HIV. Okay, that's all. Anyway, in an interview published on the Huffington Post, Jimmy Carter offered up some intriguing spiritual insight. He says, God inspired the word of the Bible, but he didn't write every word in the Bible. We know, for instance, that stars can't fall on the earth. Stars are much larger than the earth. That was a limitation of knowledge of the universe or physics or astronomy at the time. But that doesn't bother me at all. Yeah. So that Jimmy Carter, you know, there's a line, I think it's in Revelation where it talks about the stars falling to earth. Anyway, I don't want to get into Jimmy Carter's extremely shallow understanding of the Bible as compared to, say, mine. But you'll remember, it was in the book of Job where God asked the question, can you bind the cluster of the Pleiades? Can you loose the belt of Orion? And we know now, millennia later, that the Pleiades are actually gravitationally bound to one another. And that the belt of Orion, those three stars, are flying in three separate directions. And they've actually been loosed. So for Jimmy Carter to imply that the writers of the Bible, or the one who inspired the Bible, didn't understand cosmology, it just shows the shallow depth of his level of knowledge. And the fact that he doesn't understand figures of speech in the Bible. But let's move on to Jimmy's more shocking comment. Homosexuality was well known in the ancient world, well before Christ was born, and Jesus never said a word about homosexuality. In all his teachings, he never said that gay people should be condemned. And I personally think it's very fine for gay people to be married in civil ceremonies. He says he draws the line in requiring by law that churches must marry people. He says, I'm a Baptist. Get this. He says, I'm a Baptist, and I believe that each congregation is autonomous and can govern its own affairs. So if a local Baptist church wants to accept gay members on an equal basis, which my church does, by the way, then that is fine. If a church decides not to, then government laws shouldn't require them to. Each congregation is autonomous. Autonomous of God, Jimmy? Anyway, this guy's a Sunday school teacher in a Baptist church, no less. Seemingly unaware of the 19th chapter of the book of Matthew, where I would agree with Mr. Carter that Jesus does not condemn homosexuality or homosexual marriage, but he does recognize the ordinance of heterosexual marriage, previously known as just marriage. Matthew 19:3. And the Pharisees came to Jesus, testing him and saying to him, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for just any reason? And Jesus answered and said to them, have you not read that he who made them at the beginning made them male and female? And said, for this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So then they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let not man separate. Jimmy, obviously no biblical scholar. Unbelievable. Well, there you go. The influence of the NIV Bible revealed right here on the Weekly Worldview from the lips of Jimmy Carter himself. All right. Now, speaking of bad religion, I don't know if this goes to the bad religion file or I don't know where to put this, but it's from Nashville, Tennessee. This past week, a Tennessee Court of Appeals said a mother must face criminal contempt hearing for violating a court order that said major decisions regarding the religious upbringing of her two children should be made jointly with her ex-husband. So she was ordered by the court not to do anything drastic on the religious front without discussing it with her ex. The mother and her ex-husband are both Christian, according to CBS News in Charlotte. He's a Methodist, and she's a Presbyterian. I'm thinking, okay, what would possibly indicate that they're Christian? Anyway, I wouldn't just take that. Anyway, the father asked that his ex-wife be found in criminal contempt for baptizing the children without his knowledge or permission. If convicted, she could face 20 days in jail and a $100 fine. But folks, that's nothing compared to what most Methodists and Presbyterians face every day. And that's a lifetime of shallow false religion and an eternity without God. Yeah, now that's most, not all. I know there's some of you Methodists who are actually Christians, and there's probably even a few Presbyterians. Most, not all. Anyway, a rogue baptism, man. How are we doing? We're almost out of time. I can't believe it. What am I going to do here? Let's do quick from the domestic tranquility file. While the mainstream media rants on and on about Trayvon and Zimmerman, every day in America, the blood being spilled would run in the streets. It runs in the streets every day. And the state of domestic tranquility is... Well, it's frankly, it's intolerable. And the fact that we are tolerating it makes me nervous for the future of the country. This is from Louisville, Texas, from CBS. Police became aware of a problem back on March 27th when a supervisor with Verizon called to report that one of their employees, Bernice Schultz, hadn't been to work for several days and that it wasn't like her to miss work without calling. Well, officials went to the home of Bernice Schultz. When they entered the house through a sliding glass door, an officer saw a dead dog on the living room floor. An elderly man yelled out from a hidden position and said he'd be out in a minute, and he said that the officer shouldn't come back where he was. Well, so the SWAT team was called, and they sent in a robotic device with an attached camera. And when it went in, it showed the homeowner, Michael Schultz, 76 years old, lying on the floor. And then the SWAT team broke into the house. The husband, Michael Schultz, was taken outside. Officers learned that Schultz had been upset with one of his dogs for defecating inside the house. Schultz told detectives that when his wife continued to complain about the dog, he went into the bedroom and got a gun. He then walked into the living room, shot one dog in the head, and then shot the other dog at least twice. Michael Schultz told detectives that after killing the animals, he then, quote, started shooting his wife until he ran out of bullets. And she is dead. And that's the state of domestic tranquility in the DFW Metroplex. But we're running out of time. What do I want to do here? Okay. I simply don't have time to do well. I'll tell you what, let's do this. A medical marijuana delivery man in West Covina, California, has allegedly been robbed by two men. The assailants were reportedly dressed in all black with masks over their faces and wielded martial arts batons known as tongfa. Yeah, they looked like ninjas, according to the medical marijuana delivery man. He says they were dressed up and they were very intimidating, and they attacked him around 10 p.m. two Fridays ago. Police sergeant says that after the medical marijuana delivery man made his delivery, he was walking back to his vehicle, and he was approached by two males in their 20s wearing ninja costumes and holding the white batons. He says that he dropped the marijuana and the money in order to get away from these ninjas, and the delivery man was not hurt. So what happened, dude? It was ninjas. I had the money and I had the weed, you know, and like ninjas came and dude, I was scared. You know, I had to get out of there, man. No, I got away clean. I wasn't hurt at all, man. But the money and the weed, I have no idea where it went.
A likely story.
All right. From the LA Times, Dennis Rodman is broke and extremely sick. Former NBA star Dennis Rodman is extremely sick and broke. So broke he can't pay his child support. Yeah. As of March 1st, Dennis Rodman owed $800,000 in back child support and about $50,000 in back spousal support. His lawyer says that he's broke and he can't afford any additional fees. He's extremely sick and his marketability is diminishing with age and illness, according to court documents. Believe it or not, Dennis Rodman lives in Newport Beach. Yeah. And Newport Beach police were called to his Seashore Drive home in West Newport 80 times during the 8 years that he's lived there. And they still don't know if he's male or female, but they assume he's male because he used to act like a male before he got all freaky with the facial jewelry and the cross-dressing, the bizarre tattoos. And shockingly enough, he's ended up broke and extremely sick. Imagine that. All right, just another lesson to you young people out there. Avoid the facial jewelry, the tattoos, the methamphetamine, and the NBA, frankly. And get on board with personhood and do something to save the world. And, well, that's all I've got. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, Denver Bible Church, Personhood USA, American Right to Life and Theology Online, and, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back with you next week, should the Lord tarry. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.